You're going to love my next guest. Bridget Truxillo stopped by the podcast. She's a former police officer serving in assignments as a SWAT operator, the only female SWAT operator in her department, and a narcotics officer. She is also a lawyer. She has her JD, and she is the founder of My Protective Wellness, and it's a membership-based program designed exclusively for law enforcement and first responders. Their aim is to provide comfort, ease, and support in order to create a more balanced and joyful life for our first responders. Now, in this episode, we're going to talk a lot about mental health, some of Bridget's stories and what she went through, and it's just an amazing episode. You do not want to miss this show. And just a little side note, we got a visit from Bridget's cute little son, David III, next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the top-ranked Criminal Justice Evolution podcast, or CJ Evolution. Top-ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for supporting me in the past and continuing to support me. I want to give a big shout-out to our first responders out there, brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Remember, you are loved, honored, and respected. Don't believe the media out there and all these things that are being said about law enforcement. You're loved, cherished. So go out there, be safe, come home to your family and friends. You know, it's such an honor to be partnered with a great company like Detectichem. This company is helping keep you, the first responder out there, and the criminal justice professional safer by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of your hand. This app-based technology is a must-have for your organization, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. Head over to cjevolution.com and see the link to Detectichem. On to this show with Bridget Truxillo. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am so excited to have my next guest on the show, Bridget Truxillo, and she is a former law enforcement officer, and she's doing amazing things now for our brave men and women in uniform. Bridget, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here. And we were talking a little bit. You're the first guest on the podcast since I was just doing my thing down in Florida. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. I'm excited to be here with you, and I've been enjoying following your journey as well, and on all of the honesty you bring to that, because I think that it's important for people to hear that you don't just talk the talk, but walk the walk. And that's what you're truly doing for yourself now. So I think that's so important. And it's scary. I think it could be scary, and it shows a lot of vulnerability, but I think that also it's being able to do that shows your true strength. And I commend you immensely for doing that for yourself, but also sharing it with everybody the way that you do. I've enjoyed hearing your story, and it's motivating to me. So thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate it, Bridget. And, you follow my journey, and I appreciate it. You know, I wasn't always like that. I mean, it took some pretty dark places for me to fall into before I got to that point where I was willing to talk about it. But I am talking about it. And whenever I talk to good people like you and other people, it's therapy for me because I talk more about it. But I want to talk about you now. I want to talk about your background. I know you're a law enforcement officer. Again, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Tell us how you got into law enforcement. What was the catalyst that made you, and you were down in Florida. So go ahead.
Yeah, I went to the University of Florida for college and graduated with it's when I was getting ready to graduate. My journey with that is I was in my fourth year of engineering at university at Florida. I was in agricultural and biological engineering, and I did not choose that knowingly. I mean, I chose it, but mostly just because I thought, oh, my uncle's an engineer and he seems to do well. I'll just choose that. Well, I had no idea what that even meant when I was 19 or whenever I chose it. And then I hated it. And so I was in my fourth year of engineering when I withdrew from school and traveled. I went to New Zealand by myself. I went to New Zealand for a month. If you've never been in New Zealand, you should. It's beautiful and amazing. And then my dad didn't talk to me for almost a year.
Because he was mad at you? Because
he was so mad at me. I mean, he was convinced that I was on all kind of drugs. And doing, like when I say, like, I'm a, I am I've never done a drug in my life. I'm not judging anybody who has. I'm just saying I have. And so when my dad was like, what, he was accusing me of being an addict, all this different stuff. And so he was really mad at me, like came up and I had this old used car. He came and took it back from me and all kinds. So anyway, I came back and was working full time, but ended up within the next year graduated. And it was during that, like, I just didn't know what I wanted to do. Fitness was always a part of my life. It's always something that I just want to be healthy, age well, you know, that kind of stuff. And kind of realized I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to do, so my degree is in environmental horticulture. And then that reality of, oh my God, I know.
That's because plants, right?
It is plants. I love plants. I love being outside. I like the idea of having a job that did not require me to be behind a desk inside all day long. And because that just to me sounds like a hamster wheel torture, and it always has, although I did that for a while when I left law enforcement to become an attorney. But then I realized, so agricultural and biological engineering. So then I needed to just graduate. And a friend of mine was in that the environmental horticulture program. And the people at the school told me that I could use all my maths and sciences, which I had a lot of those in engineering, as my elective. So I only had to do the core classes for horticulture. So I was able, when I came back from traveling, I had to do those core horticulture classes and was able to graduate with the next year. And so, and then I was going to graduate and I'm like, holy crap, now what am I going to do? Cause I don't want to go grow celery for people for the rest of my life. And wanted a job that was challenging, physically would require me to be fit, and somehow landed on. And I joke around and say that I watched G.I. Jane, and I thought that
that's a great movie. That's a great movie.
So I decided I would become the next G.I. Jane. And I really, nobody in my family's ever been in law enforcement before. And so certainly my dad thought I was nuts all over again. But I think it's an honorable profession, and I really liked the honor that comes with it and what you can do for people. And I mean, again, I believe in the black and white rule of law. And what I've learned is, and also when I was in the narcotics unit, is there's actually a lot of gray in between the black and white.
Oh yeah.
But I just love that I could do something for my country, you know? So as cheesy as that may sound, I don't care.
No, it's not cheesy.
You know? And so, yeah. And then I signed up thinking that I would end up doing federal law enforcement. So like FBI, DEA, and then in the process of applying for that, they told me I was just too young. I didn't really have any specialty that helped them out. And that the best thing I could do would just go work for a while and then apply later.
You had horticulture, right? Horticulture.
Horticulture. So I wasn't an attorney. I wasn't an accountant, and I didn't speak some special language that they needed. And so I decided to go into the local level to get there. And, you know, did that and then jumped into patrol.
Wow.
Yeah. And then within a year I was in the narcotics unit, because they didn't have any females. They had a spot open and they didn't have any females. So it helped me get into the narcotics unit, even though I was still very much a rookie. And then 3 months after that, I got on the SWAT team.
Wow.
So
you're smart, you're badass, and you're a lawyer.
And I'm probably just a little bit crazy,
crazy, like we all are in law enforcement.
Right. Yeah.
And now you got to, well, again, thank you for your service. And how long were you in law enforcement, Bridget, again?
4.5 years. So yeah, about a year in patrol. And then I spent the rest of the time in almost all the rest of the time in the narcotics unit. And the dual roles, because our agency was not big enough to have a full-time SWAT team. So we're what you call a call-out team. Yeah, so we would still train all the time and get called out whenever we execute all the search warrants, call out whenever we had a hostage situation or active shooter or something like that. But and then because I was on SWAT and a lot of my narcotics guys were also on SWAT, that's also the reason I left law enforcement. Those stories before, but you know, as the only female they had on law enforcement on the SWAT team, I don't think they've ever had one since. I don't know if they'll ever have another one, although the times are a changing.
Yeah, they're changing,
but they were not changing when I was doing it.
Sure.
So, and that's what decided the thing that I absolutely loved it. We competed in SWAT Roundup International, which if anybody knows anything SWAT, they still have it. It's a super awesome SWAT competition in Orlando, Florida. I competed in that 2 years in a row. I got to, I just thought I was getting paid to train and work out and help people and protect people. And I loved it. And I also hated pieces of it. Yeah. So,
well, it's like any other job, you know that.
Yeah.
It's ups and downs. Now, what was the pivot? What was the catalyst to go to law school?
Well, because I was dedicating every ounce of my being in my 20s to doing that, being in law enforcement, and eventually maybe becoming a federal law enforcement officer. And then when I realized that the battles I was fighting doing that job weren't going to change, and no disrespect to anybody in federal law enforcement that might be listening, but my experience of working with federal law enforcement officers doing the narcotics work is that the issues I was facing at the local level were just going to have maybe some bigger egos involved at the federal level. And I just decided that was not a battle I wanted to fight. And I knew I had a lot to give, and I knew I could do that in a different way. So it was a huge, I mean, you talk about like identity crisis. I mean, that going into law enforcement and getting on that path was 100% a choice. Like I chose it. I was on a path. I was going to get there. And then that didn't work out. And I had no idea what to do with myself. And then I decided to go to law school. And even though that was a choice, and then I became an attorney, I never felt like being an attorney was a choice I was making. I just felt like it was something I was doing.
Yeah.
So I struggled with that job. I hated the law firm life, which is why finally, about a couple of years ago, I was like, screw this. Life is too short. I know I want to help cops. I know I can give back a lot from a legal perspective. I know what the job is like, so I want to help them from a wellness perspective. And so then I created Protective Wellness.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And as you know, the more help, the better, because a lot of our first responders out there often suffer in silence. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I want you to talk about Protective Wellness, because I checked it out and tell us about it and go ahead.
Yeah. So Protective Wellness, it provides legal support and wellness training for law enforcement. Because obviously we know law enforcement, I mean, we all know the statistics, more law enforcement officers die death by suicide than death by injury on the job, which is, I mean, a lot more. And it's heartbreaking. And I know it doesn't just affect cops that way. I know it affects firefighters. I'm good friends with a girl who works at the firefighters union here in Houston. And I think last summer they had, at least two suicides in a month, if not three. So like, that's just way too much.
Yeah.
The job just takes so much from you. Number one, from what you see, like just what the job is, the ugly, the damaged, the mean, the violent, and and then the hurt people, like the things that you never forget, like the kids that you see that are hurt. I mean, you know, I've seen the brain matter of a 2-year-old, and you can never unsee that. And I'll never forget. And especially, I mean, it gives me the chills. Like, you know, now I'm a parent of 3 kids. I just don't know how anybody could survive that. Like, and then you see it and you see the anguish on people, and that stuff never leaves you. And so it's when there's the big stressors, but then the job also has all these micro stressors all the time, and it just compounds. And what I know from living it is that you go to the police academy and they teach you the basics of everything you're supposed to do. And then you go on the job, and then you get the follow-up or advanced training to, you know, run radar or become a trainer or do whatever, but there's never what I call, and that's what I'm about to change the title of some of what I provide. Nobody gives you a wellness academy. Nobody trains you how to help yourself. About a month and a half ago, I was doing some training because I love yoga. And so I was doing actually the yoga for first responders, Olivia Mead, her program. I did one of her training sessions in October. And one of the girls I met in there, she's canine, she's also SWAT. So of course I was excited to meet her and have a good chat. And she shared with our group that she got some time off last year because she just had a bunch of critical incidents that really were doing her some damage to her.
Mm-hmm.
And her job gave her time off. They're like, no problem. You go take care of you. Your job's waiting for you. No worries there. You go, very supportive on her taking time off to take care of herself. And she said she got home and she had no idea what to do. She didn't know what to do to take care of herself.
Yeah.
And so the big part of what I do is when I say wellness training means you take care of your whole self. So that's not just working out, which hopefully everybody's doing. eating right and sleeping well. Those things, those three things are so important, but it's also taking care of your mental health, your spiritual health, and then your heart health. So it's body, mind, soul, and your heart, or mental, spiritual, physical, and social, emotional. And so I have a program that, first of all, teaches you what I mean by wellness training, those four fundamentals of wellness, and then really breaks down, what do I mean by physical? What do I mean by social, emotional, spiritual, mental? And so that you really start to understand what they are, and then teach people, or just talk a lot about that, do the physical, spiritual, mental every day.
Yeah.
And within an hour a day, you can do something in each one of those areas that will significantly impact your life in a positive way. And it doesn't have to feel overwhelming. It doesn't have to feel cumbersome, because you're just doing little pieces that cumulatively come together as an hour. And you do it when you're not having a rough time, so that it benefits you when you are having the rough time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like, you don't start brushing your teeth when you get a cavity. You brush your teeth all the time, so that hopefully you don't get the cavity, you know? So that's what I mean by wellness training. And so, and then I'm an attorney. So now I might know things about the Constitution that maybe not everybody really understands, or that I can talk about it enough to where you say, oh, okay, that makes a little more sense now. And so I also include legal training.
Wow.
Like the legal basics are kind of like a follow-up of what you learn in the police academy all the time. So examples are like qualified immunity, understanding seizure. So you can actually understand things like, you can actually seize somebody and potentially violate their Fourth Amendment rights without ever actually putting hands on them.
Sure.
And making sure people just, but in little chunks, like 20 minutes, like I talked about qualified immunity for 20 minutes. Another one that I really like is not necessarily it's like combined legal and mental, your spiritual mental health is seeking therapy. But a lot of cops are afraid to do that because they're afraid it might be used to get, one of the reasons is because they're afraid if their agency gets wind of it, they might use it against them.
Yeah.
So I gave information on like how to ask about the type of, like, does your agency provide a program for that? Questions to ask the agency to find out, like, what type of paper trail they keep on that. The people that you talk to, like, for example, you might have an employee assistance program that provides therapy. Some of those employee assistance programs are taught to not take notes. And so they have a conversation with you and they're trained to help you work through those issues, but they never put anything down in writing. So what that means is nothing can ever be used against you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no paper trail of that. You know, ask them if they have to give a diagnosis. Do they have to formally diagnose you with something in order for you to get the therapy? And if they just understand that if they do that, that becomes part of your regular file that they can have access to later. And so, you know, you can ask them, can you do this without making a diagnosis? How many sessions do I get if you don't make a diagnosis? And so I, you know, it's just in a, like a, I think that was a 25 minute video that I did on helping people understand just questions to ask. So that what I say is, so that you feel protected and safe, so that you will get therapy.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you know, the hardest, it takes a while to get there, to understand. Like I talk to a therapist like every 2 or 3 weeks, because I just call her she's my happy pill. Like sometimes I don't even know if I really need to talk to her, but I'll do it anyway, because eventually like something will come out. Sometimes I literally get on the phone and I say, okay, let me just think about what I'm present to right now or what's on my brain. And then we end up having a great conversation, or just maybe just working through something that helps me with work, or helps me with my marriage, or helps me with my friends or my sister or my mom or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was a really long answer, but I provide wellness training and legal support. And so one of the things is, very soon I'll be announcing that I have different courses that people can sign up for, like the, what I call the Wellness Academy. And then there's some follow-up that comes after that. But also you can join the membership, which is you get all of that. And if you're a member, you get access to me as an attorney. So you can book legal consultations that's included in the membership. Because I think cops, number one, don't make enough money to pay for an attorney. And then number two, I feel like if I can answer a legal question that you have, then you're worrying a little bit less, which means number one, I'm helping you be a little happier. And then number two, I can help you be a little bit more confident in what you're doing, whether in life, whether it's job or not.
That's amazing. Now, Bridget, let me ask you, I mean, you were in law enforcement for a while. So was I, a lot of listeners are, mm-hmm. And I'm not just, well, I shouldn't say just law enforcement. I'm talking about the first responder community, fire, mm-hmm. EMS. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think we're doing enough? I know we've probably come a long way. I know we have since I was in. But do you think mm-hmm. we're doing enough, or is there a lot more work to be done?
I definitely think we've come a long way. I mean, you know, I can't remember from your story when you started. I mean, I came in and I think it was 2000. And, you know, 21 years later, just the wellness conversation. Yeah. I mean, nobody was having that conversation. Nobody would have, like, there are the difference being, so I went on that call where the two-year-old died because the two-year-old found a gun while all the adults were napping. And then I saw the two-year-old and the hysterical parent. It was horrible. Like, only way I could find where the child, what apartment she was from, because we had to follow the gray and red dots along the sidewalk to figure out, because the mom had panicked and ran. It was just horrible. And there are programs now, for example, that will flag just the fact that I was on a call like that flags me. It's where they know to proactively check with me. Like, it's not meaning not just me, but so that was there are programs that do that. I know I've talked with chiefs across the country. They have a program like that where they don't wait for the officer to say, are you okay? They proactively, they have number one, a wellness unit. Number two, a program that tells the people in the wellness unit who to check with, mm-hmm. and then offer them special programs. So yes, I think we're doing a lot. I just don't ever want to say we're doing quote unquote enough. But I've had a lot of really great conversations with chiefs across the country. I talked with a lieutenant here at Houston at HPD. I mean, they have 3,500 cops. They have a whole wellness department that give them lots of different options. Smaller agencies, some of the chiefs I've talked to where they are putting something together or they're changing it. They're looking to bolster it. They're looking mm-hmm. like, well, for a long time we had one program, but now like, okay, well, let's try four different programs to mm-hmm. see, because they just want to make sure their officers have something that will, you know, because what works for you, Patrick, might not work for me, you know? So
yeah, like everybody's your routine, different.
Everybody's different. And so I love that. Like, also talked with some officers in like the DC, the DC area, Virginia, Maryland, that area, they have a lot of programs at their departments. So mm-hmm. it's great that kind of stuff at 20 years ago probably wasn't there. And there are also still lots of departments, especially the really small ones, who are starting from scratch and don't know where to begin. So hopefully they're listening to some podcasts like this to say, like, whether it's me, like you said, like, it just can't be. Yeah, I believe the more water there is, the more boats that float. So mm-hmm. whether it's me that you work with or somebody else, I don't care. As long as you're just finding a program that works for you, that helps you proactively or as a necessity, get what you need, get the help you need to figure out what you need to do to take care of yourself. So I think we've come a long way. And certainly I think the whole wellness topic is very trendy right now for law enforcement. And hopefully people are just starting to find a program that works for them, or that agencies are finding something that they can afford, that they can offer for their officers, or like you say, first responders.
Yeah. I mean, and I love what you said. I loved all of it. I really like what you said about kind of trendy, because for me, I love awareness, but too many people are using the word awareness. Okay. And mm-hmm. it's like kind of a trendy kind of, okay, awareness plus what? Plus action. Mm-hmm. We can talk awareness all day long. And again, I'm not against awareness. You need awareness. Mm-hmm. But I like the people like you who are actually doing something and putting action behind it by developing a program to give to first responders, going out there, talking mm-hmm. to people in the field. So I'm for awareness, but I'm also mm-hmm. for the action behind it. Mm-hmm. As you said, I think some departments are good. Some departments are bad with that.
Yeah. And that's what I say. That's what I hear from people, is that it's almost like they're saying, okay, I get it. Like, I have a problem, or we as a profession have a problem, but now what? Like, some people are saying, I get it. And it's almost like they're saying, okay, stop talking about it. Just tell me what to do. Give me a program. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is say, look, you might not want to use my program, but what the steps that I've put together, the explanation and what I call like training in action, like, that's going to work for somebody. And it's me telling you, like, this is, I'm saying you need to do wellness. I'm saying you need to work on yourself, but this is what I mean by that. Yeah. These are the steps to take. This is how to try and implement that every day. Because that's where I feel like a lot of officers are like, okay, already, just enough of the chitty chat. Like, just give me brass tacks. Tell me what to do. I'll do it. And hopefully it will work.
Yeah.
You know, like, even if you only try a program for a month and you don't really, you know, like, oh, it's not really for me, you're still going to get something from it.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, you're learning, you're getting closer to finding a program that does work for you or a routine. When I say program, I just want people to have like a routine that they do on a daily basis to get that, to get the positive benefit from it.
And I love what you said about routine, because when I was in treatment, you know, some of the guys down there were like, you know, I was there for a little over a month. Mm-hmm. And when I was in treatment, some of the guys were like, well, why are we hearing the same stuff? Well, because it takes an average of, I think, 20 or 21 days, as you probably know, for a routine, for a habit to take form. And, you know, and the other thing is you were talking about it. I mean, the hardest thing is to just get officers, men and women, first responder community, just to come forward and say, look, I'm suffering. I'm in a dark place, suicidal ideation, whatever, but that's the hardest step. And as you know, I mean, you were a cop for a long time. It's just that culture, you know, of law enforcement that kind of permeates a lot in law enforcement still. So, I mean, I love what you're doing, because I agree with you. You know, the more information we have out there, the more resources we have out there, I think the better, the more improved the profession is going to get. And it certainly changed for the, you know, for the better since I was in, you know, I got in the early 90s or mid 90s, and you'd go on a critical call and it'd be like, all right, do your paperwork, get back out in the field. And so now it's not like that. So, I mean, you know that, and the listeners probably know that, but what advice, Bridget, would you, first of all, I want to talk about how people can contact you, but I mean, what advice would you give people? Oh, well, let me ask you this. What advice would you give people that are getting into law enforcement? And I have a couple more questions.
Well, for sure, hopefully anybody coming into law enforcement now in this younger generation is much more open to, like, you know, the touchy-feely. My husband calls some of my stuff like this hippy-dippy, like, call it what you want. and then embrace it, you know? So hopefully this younger generation is coming in knowing I'm going to have to take care of myself as I do this, because they're hearing more and more that just the topic of suicide, cop suicide, first responder suicide is much more prevalent than when we started. Like, I don't remember hearing about that at all. I would hear about guys that, which is also sad, which could be prevented, is they retire and die a month later. Which is like, that sucks, because you spend you give so much of your life in the job of law enforcement. And then hopefully you get to enjoy life after that. And but their stress level, because they never took care of themselves. What I want people to know is, and I think a lot of people know this, but, and I'm not a scientist, but I really have studied health and nutrition for a long time. You can Google this to find the actual stats, but that when you have increased, everybody knows this, but I'm just gonna say it anyway. When you have increased stress for a prolonged period of time, you have increased cortisol. When you have increased cortisol, it is in it, you increase inflammation in the body. Inflammation in the body does so many bad things to you, including causing cancer, cardiovascular disease. So doing things early on, people think, oh yeah, it doesn't matter, I'm young, I'm healthy now. But do these things so that you can stay that way. Look, I'm 46 years old. I don't do as many pull-ups as I used to, but if I really wanted to, I could probably train for it. But I'm just saying, one of the reasons I work out is because I want to be healthy. I started a little bit later with kids, and I want to be able to enjoy my kids, you know? So I'm 46 years old. I have a 4-year-old. I want to be able to physically actively, you know, enjoy my son when he's in his teens and his 20s, and much later when my grandkids come along. I want to enjoy my grand, you know. So it's take care of yourself now so that you can enjoy life later. That's what I hope when the recruits come in, is that they aren't doing the typical, like, I'm young and there are no consequences for me thing. And understanding that, take the active steps to figure out what works for you to handle the stress that's going to happen in the job of law enforcement.
Yeah.
And you cannot avoid it. You cannot avoid, nobody avoids that in law enforcement.
And I love what you said. You mentioned yoga. I'm all for it. So part of my treatment, I don't think I told you, but you maybe read about it, was a lot of holistic you know, a big piece of Shatterproof was holistic. And I'm all for yoga. I got involved in yoga. I've done it before in the past, but now I'm into it now again. Meditation, breath work, all those things. Journaling, all those things. And that's one of the things that I hope first responders, you know.
Sorry, my son. That's okay. He's like, surprise, here's my son.
Hey.
He just woke up from a nap.
That's okay.
Hey, that buddy. Happens when you do podcasts on a Sunday at home.
That's okay.
You wave and say hi. He can't hear you, but you say hi.
Hey,
he
buddy.
Just woke up.
How are you doing?
This is Dave the Third, little Dave.
Dave the Third.
Listen, you go outside, Daddy will get, and Daddy's outside. You can edit that out or not.
Yes. Know. Yeah. Real I think life, it's, right? I think it's cute. I like it. But the holistic approach, and I can tell you're in shape, you know, I would imagine that you do a lot of holistic, trainings and things like that, which I think is very, very important. And I wish the academies, and again, I understand they have post requirements and all other stuff, but I really wish that they would spend more time on, it's not going to cure everything. It's just another tool in your toolbox, you know, with meditation.
Well,
and
to me, I call this a high liability area.
Yeah.
And I want more agencies and academies to look at mental health as a high liability area. I mean, you think about, I was listening to, I don't think it was your podcast, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and but everybody knows it. I mean, how much money do you think an agency has spent on you from the time you started till now? Or, I mean,
millions
of taxpayer dollars to train you in the academy, to train you once you know your FTO program when you come in. I mean, at least three months of you being paired with somebody, that's double salary in that moment. And then all the continuing education you have to do, we all have our high liability stuff. For me, it was the domestic violence, mentally impaired persons training, firearms and driving. Like every year you do, that's a lot of money. Do you want to just keep starting over? If you look at this as a high liability area, that it's a requirement that you're constantly teaching people how to not just take care of yourself, like physically, even though I still think law enforcement doesn't do that well enough. I mean, there's way too many officers out there who aren't. You get to the academy where you have to, you get to the academy where you have to do PT, you have to do a PT test when you get your job, and then that's it. Like my department had a PT test that everybody had to do annually, but it was a joke. And somebody shouldn't make you do that. You're in a job where you're hired to protect and serve. You can't protect if you can't take care of yourself. So Matt, I mean, I just cannot imagine not being physically fit enough to handle the fights or the chases or the things that always happen in law enforcement. So, so I think that people need to just start, as I say, come early and come often, like start early and do a lot.
And take that first step.
Yeah.
You know, take that first step. I mean, nobody, the people in the gym that are in excellent shape, they had to start somewhere, right?
It's never too late. I've always been that. I mean, I've always been an abundance mentality, not a scarcity mentality. So like, it's never too late to do something you want to do. And you can always find somebody to help support you in that if you want to, whether it's online, you're listening to this, like, let's just say somebody like, they could reach out to you and say, hey, Patrick, I heard you talk about it. You know, I feel comfortable reaching out to you because you don't really know me and you're not really in my circles, but how could I start? Or reach out to me. I don't know whoever's listening. Reach out to me and I'll tell you, first of all, congratulations, good for you. Second of all, yes, there is a place to start. And so I don't care if you've been on the job 15 years or 5 minutes, or you're just thinking about it, start now. It's never too late. And you can always, if you've already doing it, then look at other things to add in. I have a regular routine, but I switch up my routine probably about every 6 to 12 weeks, just depending on what I'm doing, just because inevitably I kind of keep things a little more fresh, like whatever my workout routine, like I just had a 6-week one that ended. Now I'm about to sign up, just little things I see online or whatever. You can always find something, and there's plenty of people out there like you and me and many others who'd be willing to help.
Now, how can people find your services? How can they find you? Everything's going to be linked up in the show notes, but if somebody wants to reach out to you and say, I really like what you're doing out there, how can I tap into your program or find out more about Projective Wellness?
The best way to find me in many different ways is just to go to my website. So okay. myprotectivewellness.com. And on there, you'll definitely have this social media links on there that if you, you know, follow me up, I will, you know, definitely would love somebody, anybody listening, follow me on Instagram. I do post a lot of different things about, you know, informational tips on wellness. And definitely includes yoga. I'll be making a post this, well, wherever this, whenever this airs, the second week of December, 2021, I will be making a post about my favorite yoga poses and why. And also the steps that I talk about, like what I mean by wellness and then how you can implement that. I have just a 7-step guide on how to find more happiness. It's called How to Be Happy and Be a Cop. That's on my website too. So you can go in and put your email in and you get that download for free.
Awesome.
Myprotectivewellness.com.
You're amazing, Bridget. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Recently I was telling somebody, like, find a way to laugh. So if you're laughing, then you're not sad in that moment. And laughing actually releases endorphins in a positive way. So I just finished watching the Ted Lasso second season recently.
Oh, I love Ted Lasso.
I just started watching
the first season.
I have to say the second season's not quite as good, but the first season I've actually watched the whole thing twice. And sometimes I go back and watch little sections and then like rewind it 3 or 4 times because it's just so funny.
There's a mental health component to it.
There's a mental health that he brings happiness and kindness into a very competitive sports world. It's more important to him to have happy people and kind people than a winning team. I mean, he'd love to win, but his mentality is that you will win if you're investing in people in the right way to start, which definitely wraps into this conversation really well. Yeah. But yes, laugh. That's what I want everybody to do, is find a way to laugh.
Bridget Truxillo said, watch Ted Lasso.
Watch Ted Lasso.
You got to do it. You're amazing, Bridget. If you need anything from me, I know it took a little while to hook up and finally make this happen, but if you need anything from me, please reach out to me.
I will. Thank you so much. And keep doing what you're doing. As I said in the beginning, you are impacting a lot of people, even if you don't hear from them that it's impacting them in that way. So keep on keeping on.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Bridget.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.